Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on hospitals when we come back. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Now, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion? That's right, she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments. Let's go back to the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits that you receive for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's and it's entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now to order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we've been talking about hospitals. And to be fair, I said hospitals have worked miracles. Doctors, allopathic medicine doctors have worked miracles. Not all of it's good. In fact, on balance, I would say that if you took a look at the medical profession, on balance, probably 10% of it's good for us and about 90% of it's bad for us. Most people would work it the other way around. They'd say, well, 90% of medicine's good, maybe there's a little bit of bad. I guess it's a matter of perception. Now, I pointed out that there's 300,000 people right now, today, 300,000 people dead, buried in a hole in the ground over the past year from medical mistakes done in these allopathic medical hospitals. Now, the people that went to those hospitals went there trusting that when they got there, they were in a safe location. That where could you be safer than in your local church or local public school or local hospital? You know, hospitals, schools, and churches are safe places. That's not Skid Row. You know, we're not talking about down here in a high drug crime zone. We're talking about a safe place for you to go. And after all, when you're sick and in pain, you know, you need help. It's pretty obvious. So we go to the hospital trusting, and we're taught to trust the hospital and the hospital staff. But I've pointed out a number of failures and foibles in that trust. Now, if you want to go to the hospital and trust the doctors and trust the hospital staff, you know, it's your choice in life. It's your business. Do what you think's right. But I pointed out that the professionals say when you take somebody to the hospital, never leave them alone. always have somebody there 24/7. And I'm going to add to that one more thing that you ought to do, and that is keep a log, keep a journal. When my boy was in the hospital, he kept a log, kept a journal. Every time the nurse came in, he wrote her name down. When somebody came in, he said, "Hey, what's your name?" And he wrote her name down. He wrote the time, the date. What did that person do when they came into that hospital room? Did they clean it? Did they bring in medicine? Did they change your bed? Did they give you, did they give you magazines? Were there visitors? By doing that, as I've showed you already, it puts the hospital staff on notice that the people in room 321 are peculiar people. There's an old battle axe in there that is asking the nurses and doctors, what are you doing and why are you doing it? The devil's advocate. Now, by doing that, you do two things. Number one, if you were driving down the road, and as you're driving down the road, the oncoming car flashes his lights. You ever had that happen to you? They're flashing their lights. Do you know what that means? That means that there's a cop up the road a piece. So you're driving down the road at 80, just tooling along, having a good time. As you're approaching this oncoming car, his lights flash three or four times. What do? Slow down. Dummy, slow down. And then you're driving down the road, and sure enough, here's this cop. He's sitting off on a side road over here. He's sitting over behind a billboard or something like that. You get by him, and you drive on down the road, speed up to 80, and live your life happily ever after. All right, now the same thing works here with the hospital. When the hospital staff knows that there's a cop, there's somebody in that room taking notes, they are very, very cautious about the way they deal with the person in that room. I mean, it's just common sense. And that's what keeps the patient alive. The nurse, the doctor, the orderly that goes in there that knows they may get sued because the guy that's in there is a lawyer. You know, if you're a lawyer and you walk into the hospital and say, "Hey, I'm a lawyer, that's what I do for a living, you know. If you want to practice malpractice, you know, make sure you don't do it in room 321. That's what we do." And you'd be amazed at the results that you get and the good service that you get. And, you know, everybody's doing their job and they're just front and center. And then, you know, if the worst case scenario comes along and they injure you or you kill you, well, then you've got the evidence that you need. You've got, well, what nurse came in at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and changed that IV? Which later we found was the IV that caused you the injury or the damage. And that's the person you want to name in the lawsuit. And then you want to name the hospital, and how long was that girl on duty, and was she, you know, practicing compulsory overtime or something on that order? You know, a stitch in time saves nine. You ever heard that old adage, you know, a stitch in time saves nine? If I knew in advance that the Titanic was going to hit an iceberg and sink, I wouldn't buy a ticket on the damn thing. I'd take a different boat, and so would you, so would anybody. Now, nobody knew the Titanic was going to sink. Everybody had confidence in the ship built by the lowest bidder, which was unsinkable, was going to sail across on its maiden voyage and set a new speed record. Everybody had confidence in it. Didn't turn out that way, but everybody believed it would. Same thing is true with the hospital. It is true that 37 million people a year go to the hospital, and most of them go into the hospital, get their services, and leave. There's no problem. It's the 300,000 that go into the hospital believing and trusting in the hospital that don't come out alive that I'm concerned about. And I pointed out that we're more concerned about bodies on airliners than we are about bodies on hospital gurneys. And I'm sitting here saying, well, shucks, what's the difference? Dead's dead, you know. Whether your loved one died in an airplane crash and it was the fault of United Airlines, or whether your loved one is dead because it's the fault of a doctor or a nurse, they're just as dead. Now, we get real concerned about people dying over in Iraq, and rightly so. And we get real concerned about people dying in airplane crashes, and I say rightly so. But I think we should be just as concerned about people dying in hospitals because of medical malpractice. And every single one of those 300,000 that I'm mentioning to you, whether it's iatrogenic disease, whether it's bad drugs, or whether it's an infection, those are all preventable, they're all negligent, and every single one of them is a crime. Every single one of them. In every single state in this country, it's a crime. Criminal negligence. and it's suable, it's actionable, and you ought to get paid. Now, the hospitals probably pay 1 in 100. So if you took those 300,000 people, about 1 person in 100 is actually going to get monetary damages. Now, would you rather have your loved one, or would you rather have $1 million? I mean, you know, that's quite a little choice to make. It may well be that you don't love that person over there just quite as much as that person would like to think that you love them, and maybe $1 million, $2 million, $3 million might take their place quite handily. But not for our family. In our family, we're not interested in suing the hospital and making a lot of money. We're interested in getting in, getting the service, getting the hell out, and then don't go back. Which is why we pointed out, you know, if there's any way you can stay out of the hospital, you ought to do that. Now, I looked in the Bible, and I couldn't find any hospitals in there. I couldn't find any prisons in there. It's a different system. They don't need hospitals because they don't have sickness. Sickness and disease, I've pointed out to you a time or two before, are caused by nutritional deficiencies, that's starvation, or by poisons. All drugs are poisons. Now, it may well be that if you put a little heroin or morphine, they call it in the hospital, into your IV drip, it'll make you feel real good. But that's a toxic poison over there. And if you put too much of it in there, you know, that'll kill you. And people actually die from too much morphine. You know, they stickle too much morphine in there. They put the decimal point in the wrong place, and then they kill that person. And now that's medical malpractice. That's negligence. It ought not to be. You know, there's lots of people that go in and get morphine, and they come out of the hospital, and they're not addicts, and they're not dead. But a lot of people go into the hospital, and they come out addicts, or they come out dead, or both. You know, one at a time. And so that's the medical malpractice that we want to avoid. Now, if you take a look in the Bible and you follow the biblical format, you won't get sick. That's number one. Now, boys and girls, if you're going to eat fat, if you're going to go to McDonald's and you want to eat fat, McDonald's hamburger now, and it isn't just Max, it's Wendy's and Burger King and everybody else, they all get their hamburger out of the big institutions, you know, like Swift and Armour. Okay, all of that hamburger is 30% fat by law. Now, in the Bible, God told you, thou shalt eat no fat. In fact, it's in Leviticus 3, verse 17, it says, you shall eat no manner of fat. Now, if you're going to eat fat, if you're going to violate that law, you need health insurance. It's just that simple. Because at some point in time, you're going to clog up your arteries, and then you're going to have a heart attack, and then you're going to have pain and suffering, and then you're going to go to the hospital, and blah, blah, blah. Now, if you could avoid fat, like I do, I don't eat fat. I used to. If there's anything better than a hamburger with lots of greasy fat in it, I don't know what it is. God must have kept it for himself. I don't deny that it tastes real good. But, you know, it's a choice that people make in life, and if your choice is to eat fat, greasy hamburgers, well, okay. Then you have to have health insurance. Or lots of money, you know. If you're a Ted Kennedy, you don't need insurance. But now, there's a second thing called blood. Now, blood is a bad stuff for you. So God tells you here in Leviticus 3:17, she's no manner of fat and no manner of blood. And he repeats that seven times. Seven statutes in the Bible say don't eat blood. So, if you're going to eat meat, you want to eat meat that's been well bled, and don't eat blood sausage, and you want to avoid blood, and that would include transfusions. So, in the upcoming surgery here, I wanted to point out to you that there's a modality for avoiding transfusions. And so the doctor, you know, he said, well, now what's your thinking on transfusions? And we said, well, we're dead set against it. And he said, okay, what if during the surgery we need blood? Well, that's a real possibility. So what you do is you think about it ahead of time, and then you donate your own blood. So you go in and you give your own blood, and then they're going to put your own blood back into you. I know it's a wild new concept, which you can't do if you have a traffic accident. And you're taken in unconscious in the medevac helicopter into St. John's. Okay, you don't have any say-so over what kind of blood they're going to stick into you. Maybe HIV tainted. But hey, listen, if you've got a choice, if there's any way that you can go in to have surgery done and have your own blood sitting there on the shelf, and then, hey, if they don't need it, they can give it to somebody else. But you know, a lot of disease is caused by blood-borne pathogens. That is, you know, hepatitis, HIV, AIDS. I don't know, there's about 10 or 15 of these diseases that are passed along through the blood. Now, I don't want your blood. Now, you're probably a real nice guy, and I love you like a brother, but I really don't want to find out what kind of diseases you have. I don't want your blood running around in my body. Here in America, we don't eat blood so much as we mainline the stuff. I mean, we stick it right into our arteries. Human blood from somebody else. Now, kids, just because you can do that, just because we have blood types, and just because technologically we can take blood out of one person, type it, and then stick it into another person that doesn't kill him right away, doesn't mean that we should. Just because we can build atomic bombs doesn't mean that we should. Just because we can make sarin gas doesn't mean that we should. You know, there's a lot of things out there that we do that we'd be a hell of a lot better off without doing them. We got 89,000 chemicals that we produce in this country every year, and we put them on the grocery store shelves, and we take them home and spray them on our lawns. But that doesn't make it good for you, for me, or the environment, or anybody else. And just because we can do it, and it's convenient, and easy, and cheap, doesn't mean it ought to be done. So tuck that one away in your heart. That's fat and blood. Now there's two other things here, sugar and white flour. Now, I like sugar. It just tastes real good. I like it on my oatmeal. And I like white flour, especially Wenzel's donuts. I think that they're pretty real nifty. And I like to drink coffee and Wenzel's donuts, especially if it's gobbed up with lots of sugary frosting, you know, on the donut. And I eat one of those once in a while. Shucks, you know, they're there to eat, and they taste pretty good, and they're made out of real wheat flour. Of course, with all the nutrients taken out. Now, it's a choice that you make in life, and you'd be better off if you never ate another Wenzel's donut if you lived to be 110, but you probably won't. Now, I don't think that you're necessarily going to come down with diabetes because you went in and had a cup of coffee and then poured in a lot of CNH pure white sugar and ate a real gooey gobby Wenzel's there with a lot of white flour and a lot of sugar frosting on it. But, you know, if you eat too many of them too often, it will. So if you're going to eat fat, blood, sugar, and white flour, you need health insurance because you're going to get sick and you're going to need the hospital. And if you need the hospital, it's a dirty, filthy, germ-infested, fetid place that's really bad for you, but that's the place you're going to have to go. So if you're going to go into the hospital, then you ought to know how to be a better survivor. What you have to do to increase your odds of getting in the damn place and getting out. Now, most of you women out there, when you have babies, you need to go to the hospital. You've been persuaded that having babies is a medical emergency. I'd like to suggest that you take a look in the Bible at Exodus chapter 1, where there were no cesarean sections performed. No cesareans. There was a time before cesareans. Now, I'm not suggesting that cesareans aren't necessary from time to time. It could well be that in 1,000 childbirths, there might be a need for one of those. But I don't subscribe to this concept that one baby out of every three born in the United States of America needs to be delivered by cesarean section. I don't believe it. I think it's bad for the babies, it's bad for the mothers, and then it has all kinds of side effects that go along with it, including all of the pathogens. Now, there was a time in America when American women could have babies all by themselves, a natural bodily function. And they in fact had a better success rate than the medical doctors. Now, here's another number for you if you like statistics, you're a baseball fan, and you like to count numbers. Here's the average practice. In America today, the average obstetrician delivering babies for a living has 11 die per year. That's right, 11 per year die. Now, I don't know how many the average pediatrician delivers. I didn't get that number. So I can't tell you that, you know, 1 out of 100 or 1 out of 30 die. I don't know what the numbers are, but I do know that it's 11. I got that number for you, 11. Now, I don't know if 11 is an extremely high number. I mean, I don't know how many babies this guy is delivering. You know, if a guy is delivering 1,000 babies a year and 11 of them die, I mean, that's a very, very low percentage. It would be better if he could deliver 1,000 and zero died, don't you think? Because the parents of those 11 babies that die, not to speak of the baby, but to just the parents, that's a god-awful tragedy. I went through that a couple of times. And I got to tell you that it takes you years to get over it. You'll get over it. You know, death is a traumatic event that you get over. But it takes a long time. Divorce is a traumatic event, and it takes time to get over it. I'm not advocating divorce. Hell, if you could avoid divorce, by all means do it. If you can avoid death, get after it. You'll be happier. But you know, death is one of those things that occurs in life, and you got to get used to the idea that people die, and especially babies. You know, from time to time, babies die. And then, of course, they write me letters here at the law school, and they say, "Why does God allow babies to die?" And they get kind of emotional about it. They call me on the phone, they cry. And God allows babies to die because of sin. There's a crime. There's a criminal action going on here, and I pointed that out this week. That when you're a worker in a hospital and you're changing bedpans and you don't wash your hands and then you go deliver lunch, that's criminal negligence. Now it's true that when you're changing bedpans and then you go deliver lunch, most of the people don't get sick. I mean, hell, you could do that 100 times, and only 5% of the people get sick. But, you know, 5 people out of 100 lunches that you deliver that get sick, they get a contagious disease, they get an infection. That's criminal negligence. You people know that you should wash your hands. And then 5% of the 5% actually die from that. That's manslaughter. That's criminal homicide. I would think that if I was working in a hospital, I would be a whole lot more cognizant. You know, just being a crummy contractor, you know, I go out and work on a job, you know, and if I screw the job up and the pipes break and it causes a big mess and it costs me a lot of money and I got to go clean it up and fix it, it's just an economic loss. And then you laugh at me and say, and you call yourself a plumber. Well, look, the plumbers make mistakes. We screw up. Contractors make mistakes. We screw up. We put roofs on that leak. We put pipes together that don't hold water. But we ain't killing people. You know, you health professionals, when you screw up, it can kill somebody. Kind of like a truck driver. You know, when you go to sleep at the wheel and you're cruising down the road at 70 miles an hour and you cross the center line, you know, you're going to kill somebody. Dummy. That's why we have log books and laws that say, hey, sleep for a couple hours, you know. Use your head. We don't do that for doctors. We do it for truck drivers. Doctors kill a whole lot more people than truck drivers do. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I'll tell you this. If you took all the restrictions off the truck drivers and the airline pilots, they wouldn't kill a tenth as many people as the doctors do. Now, medicine is great, and I'm not complaining about medicine. They do a great service for us. But killing 300,000 of us is not one of those services. And we, you and I, the general public out here, we become the proximate cause of our own injury. When you know that these hospital workers are careless and not washing their hands, and that the doctors and the nurses are working all of these hours, and then you just go in there and then don't take some kind of preventive action, you know, you become the proximate cause of your own injury. That's why I thought I'd better share with you some of these facts so that you'd know that pediatricians kill 11 babies a year. Now, I happened to run across a guy years ago. I got to tell you a story here. This guy was a Mormon midwife. And I say guy because he was a Mormon man who delivered babies. That's all he did all of his life. He just delivered babies. And in 30 years, I asked him one time, I said, hey, doc, we called him doc. He wasn't a licensed medical doctor. He never went to medical school. And he kind of like my Aunt Bessie. My Aunt Bessie delivered lots of babies. She was called a midwife. She was an old lady, died about age 87. Sweet old lady. God, I love my Aunt Bessie. And she delivered babies. She was a midwife. And all of the babies that my Aunt Bessie delivered, you know, not hundreds, but, you know, probably 100 babies in her life, they all lived. Not a single one of them died. Now, my grandmother was a midwife. you know, not a real professional. She wasn't charging money, but she attended many, many births, and she was there to, you know, cut the cord and tie it and, you know, do what had to be done. And she delivered lots of babies. I don't know if she delivered 100, but she probably delivered 30, 40, 50, something like that. And they all lived. Not a single one of them died. Well, this Mormon midwife delivered 10,000 babies in 30 years. 10,000. How many is that a year? Let me divide that out. Here's my famous sharp, 1197. Here's 10,000. Let's take 10,000, divide that by 30. My God, that's 333 babies a year. That's almost one baby a day continuously for 30 years. He worked out of Boise, Idaho, to Salt Lake City, Pocatello, Idaho Falls. He had a circuit, and he would drive around. He had an office in Idaho Falls, an office in Pocatello, and an office in Boise. Three offices. And these Mormon ladies, now he's a Mormon, remember? And these Mormon ladies would come to this guy. He had a wonderful reputation. But out of these 10,000 babies, five of them died. Five! I'm going to point that out to you. Five babies died in 30 years. Now, did you catch that first number I gave you? The average pediatrician, licensed, bonded, and insured, been to the Harvard Medical School, and he practices obstetrics every day, on average, kills 11 a year. 11 a year times 30 years would be 330, wouldn't it? Let me get that down here. 11 times 30. I know, I went to public school. Yeah, I was right. 330. So in that same period of time, this medical doctor is going to kill 330 babies. Now, we're not going to say the medical doctor killed them, but they died. He was unable to save them through whatever measures. Now, here's this Mormon guy. He was prosecuted five times in 30 years for five babies' death, mainly because he's not licensed. I mean prosecuted. I mean, it took him into court. And they said, this guy is unlicensed. He's delivering babies. He's charging money. And this baby died, and it's his fault. I wouldn't say that 11 babies that die in the course of a year is the fault of the doctor. It could be, but some of those babies are going to die. Some of them are going to be stillborn. In fact, out of this doctor's practice here, I think these five babies were stillborn. Now, the reason I bring this to your attention is because in Exodus chapter 1, there's a story in there about the babies being born to the Israelites and the king. He says he wants the firstborn killed. He wants you to kill the firstborn. And these midwives, they come back and they say, oh, by the time we get there, the baby's already born and it's too late. See, they weren't practicing cesareans, and these women were able to have babies of and by themselves. It was a natural bodily function. And this old Mormon midwife, he told me, he said, you know, having a baby is a natural bodily function. You know, it's like having a menstrual cycle. It's something that you ladies do, and we men don't do that. And because of that, we don't really know how that works, and we don't have the same experience that you do, but we can make an observation. And you don't have to go to the doctor, you know, every time you have a menstrual cycle, but I'm sure that the doctors, if they could, would persuade you that you have to come into the doctor once a month for an examination after every menstrual cycle for your own health. And if you fail to do that, you'll surely die. They've got you convinced that you can't have a baby without medical supervision, because if you do, you'll surely die. And I don't know of any women anywhere that get pregnant, have a pregnancy, deliver their babies without the aid of a medical professional. I don't know of any. Do you? I mean, it must happen, you know, once or twice here in America per year, but, you know, it's so rare that you won't hear about it. Now, it used to be pretty common that families delivered their babies. You know, like if you're going to have a baby and you're 20 years old, lady, and you know, you have a mother, and you have an Aunt Bessie, and your mother had several children, several babies, and your Aunt Bessie had several. And these old ladies probably know more about childbirth than pediatricians. And I've often wondered, I've raised this before, let's take a kid, he's a baby, he's born in Brooklyn. He's just a little baby boy, Okay? And he grows up and he goes to public school. And somebody says, well, what would you like to be when you grow up, little Johnny? And he says, well, I'd like to be a doctor. And so little Johnny, he goes to the Harvard Medical School. He comes out and he's an obstetrician. And he goes into the real world of the hospital, and then he starts delivering babies. And I'd like to ask the question, what in the hell experience does this guy have in having a baby? This guy doesn't know any more about having a baby than the average plumber, carpenter, or electrician. Well, it's true. He's read a lot of books. Probably seen the procedure done a few times. You know, I'm an old farmer out here. I've delivered many a calf. Oh, hell, I think I could deliver a baby. I've delivered a lot of calves and a lot of lambs. Now, on the other hand, my Aunt Bessie, she actually had four babies of her own. I mean, that old lady, you know, she kind of knew what it was like. So she could kind of tell you, ladies, you know, when you're 20, 25 years old and you're having your first baby, she could say, well, I've had four babies, and so let me tell you how this comes down. Let me tell you how this works. Just seems, you know, my common sense just seems to tell me that a woman who has had several babies would be a better midwife than an obstetrician who came from Brooklyn and went to the Harvard Medical School. Just, you know, taking one man, you know, and his inexperience and comparing it with a woman who's had several of those experiences. Hang on for a second. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, then go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. And I might remind you, if you're listening on the radio and you're driving down the road and you say, God, this guy's nuts. I'd like to listen to more. Okay, so a lot of times, you know, people, they don't know where to go next, and you go to the webpage, georgegordon.org, and this program will be on there, the one you're listening to on the radio right now. You can download this yourself on 32-bit quality, MP3, and a couple other sources or a couple other modalities. And in addition to that, there's over 2,000 of these Law Hour programs that are archived by title and date. Title and date, subject matter, and you can ferret it out. And if you'd like to learn more about hospitals, you'd like to get all seven of these programs, and you'd like to download them, put them on compact disc, and send them off to your Aunt Bessie or your Uncle Otto or somebody, you can do that. And it's free. It doesn't cost anything. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, the schedule, and the archives there on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. You can pick up the Law Hour in every country in the world. But not everybody in the world listens to the Law Hour and editorial review. But we do know that radio stations and people in 75 countries do. Out of 191, 75 of them listen. So the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And we double-check these numbers, and I run them through my little calculator over here. We do make mistakes once in a while, but you can rest assured that whenever I make a mistake, there will be 10 emails in here before the sun sets correcting that error. And then when we do that, then we write you a letter back and say, well, you're right about that. We did screw up. We didn't do our homework here, and we made a mistake, and we cited that number or statistic incorrectly. We try to get the numbers and statistics correct, and then we run them through the calculator and say, is there a mathematical error over here? So we do the best we can, but you know, I'm not God, and once in a while I screw up and make a mistake. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program. We try not to plagiarize anybody's material. So if you catch me plagiarizing somebody over here, you send me an email and say, you know, you didn't give credit to that guy, and he was entitled to it. I ought to try hard not to forget to do that. And then we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. And these endorsements are recommendations that you hear us giving out here, you know, for the International Forecaster or the Money Changer or something like that. Doesn't mean that the guys at the International Forecaster or the Money Changer are going to recommend the Law or an Editorial Review. Hell, they may tell you I'm the biggest nut since, you know, God created all ones. And that's because a lot of these guys, I mean, and you know, not all of them, but a lot of them, they're hostile. They don't like me. And because they're hostile, they may also be political, or they're religious, or they're economic, or they're sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And I don't agree with the viewpoint of everybody and everything that they say in every book that I cite here on the Law Hour. And so oftentimes, you know, I take exception to something, and I say, well, I don't think that's correct, or I don't agree with that. And then, of course, then they take offense at that, and they say, well, that guy Gordon, he's a stupid screwball. And I don't deny it. So I just wanted to let you know ahead of time that if somebody says I'm a stupid screwball, well, that's fine. I don't necessarily think they're stupid screwballs, and that's why I cite their material, and I say, I think that's correct. And let me share that with you. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, they're mine and they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. We have to tell you that every broadcast, because we don't want you to think that everybody out there is as crazy as I am, or that they're as Looney Tunes as the Editorial Review. And that's because most people are normal and they practice Christmas, Easter, New Year's. And then when you hear me come on the air and say, hey, did you know that Christmas is prohibited in the Bible in Jeremiah 10 verses 1 through 6 and you ought not to do that? You know, people say, well, that guy is Looney Tunes. And the advertisers, they don't want to be associated with some nut like me, but they want to sell their products to all of you listeners out there that want to listen to this screwball. So it's just money. It's nothing personal. Okay, so if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then just go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. It's simple enough, georgegordon.org. Or call us. You know, call us. We'd be happy to talk to you. Number's 417-273-4967. Okay, and I took a little time to explain that to you. Let's go back here. We're talking about hospitals. Health insurance. Our government tells us that 44 million, and the numbers go up every year, you know, I think it's up around 46 million, are uninsured. I'm one of them. Did you know that I'm uninsured? I don't have any health insurance whatsoever. And I don't want any. It's a choice that I made, and I save $10,000 a year by doing that. So let me give you some numbers over here. Now, the average guy in America is paying $10,000 plus for health insurance. That's if you can get it. And a lot of people that would like to buy health insurance and have the money, they call up the local health insurance company and they say, hey, sell me a policy. And the company says, oh, no, we're not going to sell you a policy. You're too high a risk. So, hell, even if you got the money, doesn't mean you can buy the insurance. And so my president, George Bush, he wants to protect the American people. He wants to give me health insurance. And I'm running as fast as I can to get away from that guy. I don't want health insurance. I don't want to buy it. I don't need health insurance. I don't get sick. I don't get sick because I don't eat fat, don't eat blood, don't eat sugar, and don't eat white flour. Well, you know, I eat a little bit, but not too much. And so because of that, I don't need health insurance. But George Bush, my president, he believes I need health insurance, and he's got a degree from college, and he thinks he's smarter than I am. And I wouldn't deny it. George Bush is probably a hell of a lot smarter than I am. After all, he's president of the United States, and what am I? Crummy plumber. But I want to tell you this, I'm not brain dead. Not brain dead. And I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to go to the hospital, and I don't want health insurance. So what I do is I take that $10,000 a year that I would be spending on health insurance and I rat hole that away. I buy gold coins and I stick those gold coins in a hole in the ground. And I did that in 1985. So that gave me $10,000. Back in those days, it was only about $8,000 a year would buy you a pretty good health insurance policy. And then 1986, prices went up a little bit and I rat holed a bunch more away. 1987. 1988, 1995, 2000, 2001, 2003. And so every year I keep rat-holing all that money away. Now, I'm ready. See, I'm called self-insured. Self-insured. 85, 95, 105. That's 20 years, isn't it? So for 22 years, and I've been saving that $10,000 a year times 10, get my Sharp EL1197 out here, it's $220,000. I got a war chest over here, kids, of 220,000 Federal Reserve notes, and if I get sick, I can pay it. I can pay it. So I don't need insurance, and I don't want to burden the rest of you people over here by making you pay health insurance premiums for me. Now, the other day I told you about my boy Dirk. You know he's got epilepsy. He got run over by a car when he was 10 years old, and that epilepsy developed after that. We think it's probably as a result of his injuries. Now, that's a burden on us. It's a god-awful burden. If you haven't lived with a handicapped person, if you're not, you know, if you've got somebody in your household that's blind or deaf or has epilepsy or is in a wheelchair, hey, listen, now don't sit here now and preach me a sermon, you know, about I don't have empathy or I'm uncaring or something like that. Boys and girls, let me tell you that if you're living in a household and there's somebody that's living there that's incapacitated, it is a god-awful burden. God-awful burden. And I can understand that. And because I've got that burden, I have to pay for that. I have to live with it every day. But in spite of that, we did not go to the government and we didn't sign up for welfare or food stamps or anything else. We pay for that ourselves. We believe here, just as a matter of policy, we do not believe that any of the rest of you Americans out there in Seattle, Washington, owe the Gordons a damn dime. We don't believe that for a minute. We don't think that you taxpayers down there in New Orleans that are struggling to rebuild your lives and rebuild your homes down there owe us anything. And I don't want you people down there burdened with having to buy health insurance and then pay taxes for that health insurance for George Gordon or Dirk or Jackie or any of us here. We don't want you doing that. Now that's the biblical way. Because see, in the Bible, there's a tithing program. There's a welfare system set up in the scripture, and it begins with the family. And we here in the Gordon family have provided for our own medical needs. And if we need to, we'll just go in there and buy it. Now, the reason I brought this up is because we have a medical need here, and we got some surgery coming up here pretty shortly. And we've done some research. We took a look at these hospitals, and they're dirty, filthy, putrid, feces-impacted cesspools of disease and death. But that's where the doctor plies his trade. See, when you're doing hip replacement surgery, you can't do it in the doctor's office. We asked, and the doctor said it's not very practicable here. He said you got to have a table with an operating room, you got to have air conditioning, you got to have other people helping you, you got to have an anesthesiologist, you got to have nurses, you got to have cutting tools, you got to have drills, you know, silicone, there's stuff you got to have. And all of that stuff is located over here at the local hospital. You know, the place that's filled up with all of these disease-ridden pathogens that are being spread by incompetent jerks who are changing the bedpans in one room and delivering your lunch in the next. That's the place where they do that job. You know, honest to God, I think that if that doctor came out on a job site and did the job where I'm putting the pipes together in somebody's bathroom, I think it would be just as clean. Sure as hell wouldn't be any worse than the operating room at St. John's. But the doctor said, that's where I ply my trade. That's where I do the work. So if you want the job done, that's where you got to go to get it. You know, it's kind of like your car breaks down. And there you are, broke down alongside the road. Some guy pulls up and he says, well, I'm the ABC Towing Company. And I'm a fraud and a charlatan and I'm a liar, a thief, and a cheat. And I'm going to screw you, blue you, and tattoo you, but would you like me to tow you into the nearest repair station? Well, I guess this is the guy that we're going to have to do business with. And so let's make sure that we're taking notes while the business deal is coming down. We may want to sue this guy later on. That's why I suggested to you, you know, that the professionals, this is nurses now, they tell you, hey, we know what the problems are in the hospital, and here we're giving you our advice. Don't leave your loved one unattended 24/7 in the hospital. We're going to have somebody there with our boy 24/7 in the hospital. Sober. Sober. We've carefully selected the doctor. And we even selected the hospital. We took a look at several hospitals and we said, this one here is bad, but it's not as bad as this other hospital over here. And then we're going to go in there and we're going to be real careful about cleanliness and Purex and Purell and Purcell or whatever you call that stuff. And we're going to make sure that people are washing their hands. And then when they come into the room, hey, did you wash your hands before you touch our boy? Yeah, that's right. We're a bunch of old battle axes here. But, you know, if our boy can go in there and come out of there alive, that's the name of the game. That's what we're after. So that's why I wanted to bring this to your attention. Now, if you think you need health insurance, I'm not here to tell you not to buy health insurance. If you think you need government-sponsored, government-bought and paid-for health insurance, hey, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I just wanted to point out that in all the countries that have this national health insurance, they have bad, bad, bad health practices. They have a bad health care delivery system, like in England and Canada. And I hear nothing but bad reports from England and Canada. So if I was going to have this surgery done, the last place in the world I would go is England or Canada. And if I was going to leave the United States, I would go to India. That's number one. The Philippines, number two. Indonesia, number three. And why is it? Well, because they've got facilities over there that are marketplace facilities that cater to people that want good health care. Now, we took a look at India and the Philippines, and we took a look at our local hospital, and we have weighed it in the balance, and we have decided that we'll spend a little extra money and do it here in the States. Hell, you Canadians up there, when you need something done, you come down here to the States. And that's because it's better. It's bad here, but it's better than what you got in Canada. So there isn't any reason for anybody listening to me, wherever you live in the world, to go to Canada. But if you're looking for a surgery and you need this done, hey, check out India. Check out the Philippines. They've got hospitals that are built with Indian and Filipino doctors, trained in the United States, very skilled, qualified, capable people. I'm not complaining about the skills and the qualifications of the people involved. I'm complaining about their hand cleanliness, washing their hands and transporting disease. I'm complaining about them working 30-hour shifts, for crying out loud, and then coming in here and poking the buttons on my boy's computer delivery heroin in his IV drip. That's what I'm complaining about. When the guy comes in there and pushes the button, I want this guy sober. Sober. That's why I want the job done on Tuesday, so he has a chance to sober up from the weekend. Hell, I'm an old construction worker. I know what drunkenness is all about. That's why I prefer Mormon doctors, because they don't drink. Well, as a rule, you know, there's some Jack Mormons out there that drink a little. But the last thing you want is an Irish doctor on a Monday morning after the weekend. I mean, you know, let's grow up and get real here. All right, so now we've taken a look. Now, there's no hospitals in the Bible. In Exodus 1, we find there's no cesarean sections, and we find that you'd be better off if you had delivered 10,000 babies with 5 dead in 30 years than going to a pediatrician with 11 dead on average per year. Not to say that the pediatrician who's got 11 deaths per year is causing these deaths. I'm not suggesting that. But he ain't as good as the Mormon midwife that can deliver 10,000 with only 5 dead. I thought that was pretty good. And then keep in mind that he was prosecuted 5 times, and none of these medical doctors ever get prosecuted, whether they kill them or not. And I've seen a lot of doctors get sued, and they all carry malpractice insurance, but I've never seen a one of them prosecuted criminally for his criminal neglect, which is the law of New York. You know, if you were locking more of these doctors up for their criminal neglect, I'll bet you they'd wash their hands more often. I'll bet you in their own self-interest, they would limit the number of hours that they work so that they were alert on the job so they didn't screw it up. You know, if I go out to your job site and I screw it up and cause you a damage, you're going to sue me and make me pay. Don't you think doctors ought to pay when they screw up and they cause somebody a damage in a hospital? Don't you think hospitals ought to pay? Why is it that plumbers and carpenters and electricians ought to pay when we come out and screw up your job site, but doctors shouldn't pay when they kill your husband, your brother, or your child? Huh? Answer me that, would you? Send me an email. Explain it to me. Explain that to me for me. All right. Now, health insurance is the same thing. Now, I'm not here telling you not to go to the hospital. I'm not telling you not to buy health insurance. I'm just pointing out that, you know, you'd be better off if you took that $10,000 a year, rat-holed it away someplace, not in $100 bills because you're losing 10% a year, convert it into something intelligent like gold or silver or wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, and then sit on that stuff, and then forget that health insurance because the health insurance company ain't going to pay anyway. And I've reported a number of times on these horror stories, you know, like you Hurricane Katrina victims down there. You bought this hurricane insurance, and then when the hurricane came, destroyed your house, they said, well, we don't pay for flood damage, and your house was destroyed by flood. Caused by what? Hurricane. See, you thought that a hurricane is a hurricane is a hurricane. Okay, no, we pay for hurricane damage. We don't pay for flood damage. And so you found out that after paying your premiums for 27 years, you can't collect when the damage occurs. Well, same thing is true with health insurance. The health insurance companies, they write these policies up, and then when you get sick and you go to the hospital, we don't cover that. And then it's written right into the policy. We don't cover that. You can sue them, and the judge says they don't cover that. But the salesman said, maybe he did. Have you got any documentation? Got a tape recording? By golly, I do. When we go to the hospital, when we're talking to somebody, we got documentation, we got witnesses, we got names, dates, times, places, facts, witnesses and evidence. Want to come in here and sell me an insurance policy? I'll sit you down, Mr. Insurance Agent, and I'll sit you down with a tape recorder and two witnesses present. Let me tell you, let me ask you this. Does it cover this? Oh, it does. Well, good for you. Hey, does it cover that? I'll tell you a little story here. One time I had a salesman come in here. I hate to tell this story because it makes me look like such a jerk or such a fool, such a dummy. And I'm a trained professional. I'm over here teaching law for crying out loud. I needed to buy some books, so I called the Westlaw people. I said, hey, come on out here and sell me some books. And the salesman came over, and he showed me the neat brochures, and he told me all the stories. And God, I was so excited. And I said, well, I got this much money, and so I'm going to pay cash. And he said, well, we don't charge interest, and you can finance this for 4 years, and you don't have to pay any interest. And I said, well, say on, boy. And he stayed on, and when he got all three, he sold me $9,000 worth of books. I was prepared to buy four, but he sold me nine. And he says, do you want the updates? And I said, no. And he said, well, they're free for the first year. Initial here. And so I initialed there, but I didn't read where I initialed. And it said they're free for the first year, but if you want to cancel, you have to send us notice. And if you don't send us notice, then we're going to send you the bill. So I didn't send them notice, and they sent me a bill for $9,000 for the updates, which, you know, the salesman said were free. So I whipped out the contract and I read the fine print. I got my, you know, I got my 10 power loop glasses on. And I says, oh my God! I initialed it and I didn't read the paragraph. And I said, it's the clearest case of fraud I've ever seen. And I told Westlaw to stick that contract where there's no daylight and let's litigate. And we did. And I didn't pay him the $9,000. I took them to court, and I beat them. That's Westlaw. No, I'm not opposed to Westlaw. Westlaw is in the business of selling books. But they shouldn't send their salesmen around to lie to us and defraud us. And the insurance companies, I don't find fault with them. They're there to sell a product, to sell a service. But their agent shouldn't be telling you that this covers hurricane damage. But on paragraph 18, if your house is destroyed by the flood surge, you don't get paid. They need to tell you that up front, front and center. Doctors, hospitals ought to be telling you that also. You should be asking questions of your doctor. How many of these surgeries have you done, doc? Oh, this is your ninth one, huh? How'd the other eight come out? Oh, four of the patients died and two of them weren't successful, but two of them were. Well, doc, you just keep practicing, and then when you get some experience behind you, you know, I had to put my first pipes together. And I got to tell you that, you know, when you put your first pipes together, sometimes they leak. But over the years, as you plumb, you know, you learn tricks. You know, you find out that a lot of times, you know, maybe we ought to do a pressure test on this line, you know, before we put water in it. And, you know, sometimes you start checking things out and you find out that, well, you know, there are little tricks to the trade over here. Now, after you've been doing this for 25 or 30 years and you call a plumber out, you know, and how long you been plumbing? 30 years? Oh, well, that guy probably knows his pipes. Well, you know, when this guy is an apprentice and he comes out here and he says, well, I'll do this on the weekend, you know, after work, you know, then you're going to get what you pay for. And a lot of times people, you know, they hire this guy and he comes over and he does the job and they pay him the money and then the thing turns, you know, turns bad on him and then they get real mad and they say, well, you know, this guy came. Hey, who did you hire? Oh, you didn't want to hire a plumber that belongs to the union, had 30 years of experience because he's old and he's slow and he does meticulous work and charges $50 an hour. You wanted to hire that punk, you know, that was still an apprentice and he came out and he did it for $10 an hour, but then it went sour on you and ain't guaranteed. See, when we do the job, sometimes we have to come back and fix it at our expense. That's why we charge more. Now, the Bible teaches strict liability. That means you're responsible for your actions. That's why I told you people over there, I said, I don't think you people down there on the Gulf Coast ought to be buying insurance for George Gordon. I don't think you ought to be paying my bills and furnishing me with health insurance. We practice strict liability. We here in the Gordon household, we're responsible for our own. That's why we take care of our own boy. We pay for our own surgery. We go out and make our own deals. It's not only better for us, it's cheaper for us. And it's cheaper for you. It's better for you. I'm not a drag on you. So there's the story on hospitals, and we bring you the story, you know, with a spirit. If you're a doctor or you're a nurse, hey, listen, I'm not throwing rocks at you. Wash your damn hands when you're in the hospital. Pay attention. You already know what needs to be done, so go do it. You know, that's the way I am. I'm a plumber. I know what has to be done. I take shortcuts. And when I take a shortcut and the pipe leaks, I come back and fix it free. Unfortunately, in your business, you can't resurrect people that you've killed at any price. All right, we're out of time, kids. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. So let me remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet, and worldwide daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And remember, the law school offers a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's about up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.